Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. This episode of Variant Frequencies is a story written by Anne Stringer and narrated by Heidi Jones. The background music is performed by Neil Stringer. And now, Dead of Night by Anne Stringer.
He disappeared so fast, I'm not sure I ever really saw him. It's not so much his appearance that had me gasping, striking though it was. It was the time of day. I call it the dead of night. I know that somewhere nearby, people are awake and functioning. Police, nurses. But there on the street where I was, there was no one. The whole world could be asleep. Or dead. It was 3 a.m. I was up walking because I've never been able to sleep well at night. A night owl, my mother used to say. I don't really come alive until evening. And by 3 a.m. I'm pretty wired. I'd given up trying to alter my circadian rhythms, my internal clock. I even moved clear across the country, hoping the change of time zones would help. It didn't. I suppose I should have been one of those night workers. None of that appealed to me, though. I always wanted to be around books, so I got a master's degree in library science. I worked in a city library, evening hours at least. Now it seems like it was a pretty dumb idea. All that time, effort, and expense. The thing is, I love books. Not just for the ideas, the stories, and wisdom they contain, their ability to transport you anywhere you can imagine, but also their very feel. The binding, the way crisp pages sound when you turn them, the ink on paper, even the way they smell. I thought I'd be in heaven if I could work in a library. Reality didn't quite measure up. I liked the books just fine, but not the people, and unfortunately I had to deal with them. Oh, most of them were pleasant enough. They loved books just like I do. They came to read, to wander among the stacks. They came for the love of it, or because they didn't have the money to drop at the bookstores on a whim. Or they were students, researching the old-fashioned way. Maybe they didn't have internet access, or maybe they wanted a real book to quote. Maybe their teacher told them they had to come. But the bums came, too, for a place to get out of the cold or sleep away the day. The bored came to kill some time. The ones who showed no respect for the books made me crazy, breaking spines and leaving stains on pages. The children were the worst. They put me in that section first, but I only lasted a few weeks. People brought their kids to the library and left them there, expecting us to provide free babysitting services while they went to the beauty salon or the bar or wherever the hell they went to get a break from their offspring. I've never been fond of children, which is fitting, I suppose. Sadly, I fit the stereotype of a librarian. Smallish, plain, quiet, and shy. I never dated in high school and not much in college. I had friends. I'm not a complete pathetic, but they tended to be bookish nerds like me. Anyway, there's not much chance I'll ever have a great love, marriage or children, so it's just as well that's not something I wanted. So I worked from 3 in the afternoon until closing in one of the city libraries. It wasn't making me as happy as I'd hoped. In this expensive town, I made enough to keep myself alive. I lived in a one-bedroom apartment, nothing special in a nothing-special neighborhood. After work is when I really came to life. I should have done something exciting then, but all I did was have dinner, go see a late movie, and walk. Maybe it's crazy. Maybe that's when the dangerous predator types were out, but I'd come to believe that I was invisible. I hardly ever saw anyone. Nobody ever bothered me. It was close to dawn before I could sleep. That's why his appearance stunned me so much. There he was, suddenly on the sidewalk in front of me. He couldn't have been more than 6 years old. His clothing was ragged and not nearly warm enough to protect him from the night's chill. And he looked up at me with big eyes that looked as black as the night. I've met far too many irresponsible parents, but this was too much. A small child, alone on the street, in the dead of night. I glanced around to see where he might have come from, some adult who might be responsible for the boy, but there was no one. He was alone. "Where's your mother?" I asked. "Are you lost?" But he just stared at me with those amazing eyes. I stepped towards him. "I'm going to help you, okay? I'm going to call a nice policeman and he'll help you get home." Impossibly, his eyes got even wider and he ducked behind a store. I ran to the corner and looked, but he was gone, leaving me to wonder if I'd seen him at all. So I wondered what to do. I couldn't just leave him out there to fend for himself, could I? Sighing, aggravated, I took out my cell phone, peeled off my gloves, and dialed 911. A board operator took my report and asked me to wait there. 10 minutes seemed much longer, my fingers beginning to numb with the cold, but finally a patrol car rounded the corner. 2 officers got out. I told them about the boy, feeling like an idiot. I pointed to where I saw him and where he went. They looked with flashlights. Of course, there was no sign. They would keep an eye out, they told me. Patrol. Ask around, see if anybody else had seen a little kid like that. One of them leaned in toward me, shining his light in my face, and I realized he was sniffing for alcohol, looking for pupils dilated or constricted by drugs. Who else would be out here at this time of night, hallucinating lost boys, but a drunk? They asked if I wanted a ride home, and I said no. They told me to be careful. It was not safe out here. They got back in their car and drove on, slowly. I went home, went to bed, but lay awake for a long time. When I did sleep, I dreamt of enormous black eyes. The next day at work, I couldn't get him off my mind. I looked at every child that walked or ran through the library, searching for him, but they all looked so ordinary by comparison. I couldn't possibly be remembering him right, I realized. Maybe it didn't happen at all. But nighttime found me walking the same street again, looking for him. I lingered in the spot I first saw him for a long time. There was no sign of him, and none of the police either. So much for patrols. Feeling like an idiot again, I walked home. I kept glancing behind me, but no one was there. I tried to forget it, but I couldn't. Every night, I strolled the same path, looking for him. The nights were getting colder. Even in the short time I was out, my fingers were aching from it, and I worried that he was frozen somewhere. I didn't know where to begin to look. There's a bench at the bus stop at the corner, and I sat there as if I was waiting for one, though no buses run by there at night. Suddenly, he was next to me. My heart lifted, oddly. I don't even like kids. He looked up at me, and I looked down at him. "You called the police," he said. I nodded. "I was worried about you. They can't help me." "Of course they can," I said. "They can help you find your home." "I know where my home is," he said. "Then why are you out here in the middle of the night?" I asked. "Why are you?" he countered. "Good point." I could have told him I'm a grown-up, I live alone, take care of myself, sleep when I feel like it, but I didn't. Instead, I studied him. He's very beautiful, pale to the point of translucence, and up close I saw I wasn't mistaken. His eyes are black. It doesn't look as weird as you might think it would. "Isn't your mom worried about you?" I asked. "I don't live with my mom." "Who do you live with? Aren't they worried about you?" He just shook his head. Even his lips were pale, and he looked hungry. "I'll get you some food, at least," I said. "I'll take you home." "No," he said, getting up. He smiled, but there was no happiness in it. "I don't need food." "What do you need?" I asked. Unwilling to let him go, I reached for his hand. It was colder than mine. He pulled his arm away, and he was surprisingly strong for someone so small. "I'm looking for someone," he said, and he walked away. Then he paused, glancing back at me. "Don't call the police or you'll never see me again." I nodded, realizing I couldn't bear that. After that, I looked forward to my nightly walks. I lived each day impatiently functioning, passing the hours. He was there almost every night. We walked together, maybe talking a little. I told him about me, thinking he'll relax and do the same. He said very little about himself. I realized I must have been wrong about his age. Then one night, I was astonished to see how healthy he looked. Still thin, of course, but positively glowing. Color bloomed in his lips and cheeks. He'd lost that half-starved waif look. His eyes were half-closed, almost glazed. He smiled, and it was a real one this time. He looked like he'd just had Thanksgiving dinner, and made me smile, too. We walked together, and I watched him. Though the cold breeze cut through my jacket and sweater, he didn't seem to notice it. He stood straighter, almost swaggering. He seemed full of confidence. His attention seemed elsewhere, too, as he only vaguely replied to things I said. When he left me, he looked back with a smirky little smile that seemed to say he really didn't need me. He was fine on his own. It nearly broke my heart. I didn't see him at all for the next week, though I went out nightly, pausing at street corners, buildings, and parks where I'd seen him before. There was no sign, and I began to worry again. I passed the time in the same way, working distractedly in the evenings, haunting the streets at night, searching for him, sleeping after the sun came up. Finally, he was there. He sat huddled on a bench, his knees drawn up. He was pale again and shivering. He looked up at me, his eyes swimming with tears. In that moment, I realized I'm in love. Not a romantic, sexual kind of love. I'm not a pedophile. I think I know how mothers feel now. The good ones, not the ones who dump their kids at the library on Saturday evening. The ones who love their children so much their hearts ache with it. Who read to them, who would jump into a fire for them. Romantic love can fade in time, when you begin to wonder what you ever saw in him, and you divorce him and never see him again. You always love your child. It's a selfish love, too, though. I no longer wanted to call the police or social services because they might have found him and reunited him with his family. They'd never appreciate him like I do. They'd just keep doing whatever it was they did to drive him away in the first place. He'd be unhappy. Worse, I'd never see him again. I think he saw it when he looked at me. He slipped his hand into mine. "Come live with me," I said. "Let me take care of you." He shook his head. "I couldn't live in your place," he said. He stood, facing me where I sat on the bench, his wonderful eyes level with mine. A slight frown creased his brow as he seemed to consider something. "Do you love me?" he asked, finally. I nodded. "Would you kill for me?" I nodded without hesitation. I would kill or die for him. He leaned into me, wrapping his small arms around me, burying his face in my neck. I felt the wetness of his tears on my skin, but they were gone by the time the hug ended. His next question surprised me. He asked it shyly, eyes downcast, sounding for the first time like the child he appeared to be. "Do you want to see where I live?" Yes, I did. I stood, let him tug me down the street, his grasp of my hand strong. We walked through the darkness for hours. It seemed so, anyway. I'd lost track of time. We left the working-class neighborhoods on the fringe of the city for the older, run-down slums deeper in. The streetlights were not as well maintained as in my neighborhood, so the street was darker. The houses were tightly packed, peeling paint and shedding broken glass. An occasional vacant lot overgrew weeds and trash. Even here we saw no one. "Hurry," he urged, and I realized he would go faster if not for me. I quickened my pace. When we stopped, the first tinges of daylight were starting to stain the eastern sky, and I was tired, but he was a restless bundle of nerves. We were in front of a vacant two-story house, the kind of place where the homeless camp out if they stumble upon it. "This?" I said, dismayed. He nodded. "Come on." He tugged me around the back. There was a door hanging from half-broken hinges, and he pulled it open. "Be careful," he said. "There are holes." but he hurried me through. It looked as though it had been deserted longer than he'd been alive. He couldn't have grown up there. When we came to a door inside, barely visible, he pulled that open too. There were stairs going down into a cellar. I hesitated, realizing I didn't even know his name. "Come on," he said anxiously. I followed him down, unable to see. I moved cautiously, my hand to a wall, extending a foot to test the boards before committing to each step. Something brushed over my face, and I jumped, then laughed. Spider webs in a haunted house. There was another door, and I heard keys jingle. He worked it open. "This is it." He struck a match, lit a candle so we could see. I looked around the tiny chamber, barely tall enough for me to stand straight. It must have been a bomb shelter, built during Cold War times, when we were scared that the Reds would launch a nuclear attack on us. I searched my mind for something positive to say. "How did you find this?" I asked. "I needed it," he said, as if that answered my question. He pointed to a musty mattress on the floor. "That's where I sleep." I turned to him. "Come home with me," I pleaded. He shook his head. "I'm tired," he said. "Stay with me?" "All right," I relented. Spread my coat on the mattress and we lay down. He snuggled into my arms and sighed. I dozed. He shifted. That's when I felt it. The featherlight touch at my neck. That's all it was. A touch. It didn't hurt at all. His head was there, and there was wetness, but it wasn't tears this time. It was blood. Mine. And his bite was so delicate, I barely felt it. He drank deeply. "I was looking for you," he said, wetly. I was so languid, I couldn't move. Like I'd been drugged. I was dying, but I didn't care. But I didn't die, at least not in the usual sense. When we awakened, it was night again. The candle had long since flickered out. The darkness was complete. But somehow I knew it was night. My time. Our time. And I could see. "Are you mad?" he asked. I smiled. "No," I said, and I meant it. My tongue touched canine teeth that are just a little longer and sharper than they used to be. I felt strong, alive, hungry. "We'll find some place better to live," I said. "I'll care for him, teach him to love books as I do. Love him. Kill for him. Forever." He nodded. We joined hands, climbed the stairs, and went out into the night.
Thank you for listening to Dead of Night by Ann Stringer and narrated by Heidi Jones. Please visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com and follow the links to our online journal. There you can learn some of the story behind our stories on Variant Frequencies. The Variant Frequencies team would love to get some help from you, our listeners. There are some sites where we really could use your support in helping us get the word out about Variant Frequencies. Please go to these sites and vote for us and leave comments where you can. Dramapod.com, Podcast Pickle, Podcast Alley, Podfeed.net, and Podcasts.yahoo.com. You can find links to all of these on our website. Most of all, if you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you from the Variant Frequencies team, Rick Stringer, Matt Wallace, and Ann Stringer.
Michael and Evo's Slice of Sci-Fi.
For the latest news and information in science fiction, TV, and movies,
Michael and Evo's Slice of Sci-Fi.
What the?
If you're watching it on TV or spending too much money for it at the drive-thru, it's on
Michael and Evo's Slice of Sci-Fi.
Aw, for the love of Pete, not again.
Weekly podcasts, stimulating interviews, and...
Meningay, what are you doing?
I'm making a promo.
You're jacking around with the vocal effects, aren't you?
Well, maybe a little.
What did I tell you about that? This does nothing, nothing, I tell you, for our image problem.
Yeah, but it's for other sci-fi related shows to run.
I don't care. Tell them to visit the website. Tell them to listen to the show. That's it. Now, don't make me come back in here.
Fine. Some pod Yoda you are. Please visit our website at sliceofsci-fi.com and be sure to listen to...
Michael and Evo's Slice of Sci-Fi.
Ha 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 ha.